Hello, and welcome to episode 37 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And happy First Contact Day.
Yay.
And in case you don't understand what that is, of course, 44 years from today, Zefram Cochran takes a little stroll with his new warp ship. I don't know the name of that thing. The Phoenix, that's what it is. And catches the attention of Vulcans, and we have first contact. So anyway, that's April 5th, 2063.
Super cool. 43 years ago tomorrow, I was born.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thanks.
I won't play the same thing, but I will play this.
Oh, goodness.
Happy birthday, Ruthie.
Thank you.
All right. So we will be covering season 2, episode 12, which is titled Through the Valley of Shadows. Mm. But before we get to that, we've got some feedback, actually quite a bit. So sit back and relax, or fast forward, whichever you desire. Somewhere you will see in the show notes, our discussion of the current episode will begin. But anyway.
Gotcha.
Season 2, episode 11, Perpetual Infinity. So let's open hailing frequencies. All right. So our first is from Ken from Chicago, and I must, I did apologize to Ken because somehow this fell through the cracks last week. And although he got the feedback in plenty of time, good old Twitter did not tell me.
Aw.
So.
Darn Twitter.
I don't know. Sometimes I go looking for it because, you know, I was, we had our recording a little later. Well, I went looking for it, still didn't find it, but it was there. Hmm. So. Unfortunately,
it's very strange.
Yeah. Well, he says, hashtag Star Trek Discovery, hashtag Perpetual Infinities rating is 8 out of 10 time jumps, hashtag Back to the Future, because where hashtag the Red Angel is going, she won't need roads or emotional personal bonds with people, but only the big picture or larger mission, which everyone else did. Yep. All right.
That's awesome.
Do you want to do the yeses and nos? And then I'll do the hold your horses and feedback.
Okie dokie. All right. Ken's first yes is the emotional performances in the scenes between Michael and her mom, Michael and Spock, Pike and Leland, Leland and Ash, Leland and Giorgio, Giorgio and Gabrielle, who is Michael's mom, were all so good to watch. And his second yes is Leland learned from the Untouchables, bring multiple guns to a gunfight. Hashtag packing heat.
You could say the same thing about Michael in this episode.
No doubt. That was pretty awesome. Anyway, okay, and he's got some no's. As awesome as Giorgio was in the showdown, why was no one else helping? They're all gawking at Michael and mom. Hashtag little help, please.
I have to agree with that. They're just standing around.
Like, hey, what are they doing? I don't know. She looks like she's got it under control. Anyway, second no. Better reason why the future was pulling the Red Angel back, please. Suit glitch, something, time, gravity. That problem shows up again in Trek, and he's got a thumbs down.
Hmm. Well, I think that's the wormhole pulling. So that's part of the wormhole.
I can't really say with any authority what's going on with this time travel business.
It's best not to try. to figure it out. All
I know is it's wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
All right. So then his hold your horses, which he also calls.
What?
And if you don't know where that comes from, that's what we call the hold your horses in the Walking Dead talk through, which is what sauce, but we use that sound effect. So anyway, he says, I get control has faking emotional humans, hashtag humans for the win. Unless they were so morally questionable, no one questions their inhuman actions, but why not mimic others? Just have an army versus just one guy. Well, we just got the second guy. Also, where was the rest of hashtag Section 31's ship crew? Yeah, I wondered that myself. That, especially on that ship, it was like after Giorgio and Tyler beamed off that ship, there was nobody else there. So unless he killed them all, I don't know. But then he says, wait a second. Okay, so I cannot comment on this because I have not seen the second episode of this. Of hashtag the Twilight Zone spoof the pilot of hashtag Star Trek Discovery, or was the pilot of hashtag Star Trek Discovery a spoof of the Twilight Zone?
I don't know either.
Yeah, I did watch some of the first episode of the Twilight Zone, but I haven't gotten through the whole first episode, and I know the second episode's out there, so maybe before I finish editing this, I will know. But you'll have to find out next week. His feedback, he says, time can be measured in space by looking at the stars and how much they move.
That is true. I did forget about that. Yeah. That is true.
That's kind of what I was trying to say when I said star charts, but Ken has said it much better than I did.
He did. He really, really did.
Yes, I did. I did not. It's like, how is a map going to tell you what the time is? It's not.
Yeah. Apparently, they move through space at some kind of constant rate or something. They're moving apart from each other.
Yes.
So, you know, physics, whatever.
All right. Hashtag control could have used regular drones or robots to tie up Leland. Okay. That's a good explanation, I guess. Maybe indirect exposure to coronal radiation has irradiated Dr. Burnham, so she is still linked to the future outside the suit.
Maybe.
My thought is she just got sucked through a wormhole. But the question is, you know, like, how much space does she have to travel in said wormhole? And does she essentially get spaced, or?
That was my thought.
Yeah, that is my thought as well. All right. That's it for Ken. We also have feedback for Ken for the regular episodes. So
yay,
let's move on.
All righty. It's Aaron.
Yes. Aaron from Akron.
Okay. Says, it was definitely better than the previous episode. I'm convinced that Burnham is going to be the Red Angel now. Also, they're going to have to park Discovery for 1,000 years to catch up with the suit and Gabrielle Burnham. But where are they going to get a new time crystal? I give it 8 out of 10 snaps back to the future. Ha ha.
Well, now we know.
I know. At least one of those questions is answered this week. All right, and then Brian from Hawaii says, after watching this week's episode, I'd like to revise my rating for last week's episode down to 9.6. Aw.
And I think he had a 9.8 or a 9.9. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Then we have some feedback from James, and I was talking to him today, and I asked him, I'm like, we just keep calling you James. What should we call you? And the answer is James the Sailor.
James the Sailor. I like it.
Yeah. Popeye the Sailor Man. We'll call you James the Sailor Man. Anyway, most of the way through the cast, just wanted to say, man, everybody's really up on the who tied Leland up thing.
That's true. There was a lot of that.
Yeah. To me, it's a pretty simple explanation to rationalize. Control is in the ship's computer. The ship has replicators and all those little drone thingamadoos running around. So control replicated what it needed, and the little drone thingamadoos to bind him. Bam. You are welcome. LOL.
That was amazing.
Also, there was discussion about how the Red Angel suit knew how far into the future it jumped. Ruthie, while time may not be kept 950 years into the future, I think the suit has its own built chronometer based on stardates. That the whole jump got messed up and altered, it knew exactly where it went based on its onboard chronometer. Also, yeah, my feedback that Ruthie read, I didn't realize I skipped a word there, but hashtag Ruthie's right. There should have been a C inserted there. Sometimes my thoughts get ahead of my fingers. One last thing, Mark Decote, and he also told me that I could call him by Mark Decote or Mark from Ontario, Canada, so I will alternate. I'm taking credit for the Discovery Scuttled and New Discovery Next Season theory. I totally called it like 6 episodes ago. Mine. With a bunch of smiley and big smiley emojis.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I do that too. Sometimes my fingers go faster than my brain or something.
Yeah.
Or my brain is faster than my fingers. Something like that. Whatever. You get it.
I do.
All right. Cool. I think that I am also, based on this week, leaning more toward the whole Discovery is getting scuttled thing. I think that's what's going on.
I agree.
Okay. Mike from Cleveland says, everyone keeps misrepresenting why Arium was dumping her memories. It wasn't that she didn't have enough capacity for her day-to-day life. She needed all the extra space to download the sphere's entire memory. Comparing the size of the sphere and the number of years it had been gathering data to Arium's physical size, her memory circuits had to have been amazing. That's not a bad point.
There had been some more discussion about this on the Facebook group post for the podcast episode, but I'll just share a little bit of it. I had the distinct impression that she had been doing this discarding of memories thing for years, because she comments that Tilly probably wouldn't enjoy having to do it every week because of the tedium of it. And based on that, though, Mike, he continued to assert his belief on his point that this was something that she was doing just for the get the space for the sphere. But I'm just going to have to say, I think we have to agree to disagree, because I don't agree with you on this. I see what you're trying to say. I just don't agree with you. So, and I don't think you're going to convince me.
Oh, me either, because she did not do that just so that the sphere would have memory. Yeah. She had been doing that was a day, like a daily week task, whatever for her. So. Yeah. And it wasn't, I don't know. I mean, she's got, it wasn't just that she didn't have that much memory. I think it was more like she had memories from how many years?
Yeah.
And I mean, heck, if I could ditch the memories I have of, you know, walking down the hall or whatever in favor of something that I find more pleasant, I probably would too.
Right.
But I mean, I'm sure she could probably get memory upgrades or whatever. Some upgraded RAM.
Well, you know, and if she went to a quantum, you know, some kind of quantum memory storage or something like the suit has, then maybe she could have had unlimited storage like the suit apparently had. But that's not the case. And we unfortunately don't get to learn more about how, you know, she's set up. So, you know, it's unfortunate. It's one of those things, like I said, you know, if we had learn those things over the course of a season, we might know a little bit more about her and how her cyborg body works.
Stuff works. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you think about it, I don't know. I mean, okay. I don't even want to hazard a guess at how much memory she has. I'm sure it's, I don't know what's bigger than a terabyte, but she's got
petabyte.
Okay. So she probably has a few thousand petabytes or whatever. I don't know. But think about this. A 1080p 45-minute video is like 2 gigabytes. And I mean, she is walking around and experiencing life in what, panoramic surround sound video thing? I mean, some kind of high def, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably something like 32K as opposed to 4K or 1080p.
Right. So if you think about that, how much space does something like that require? So it's not just about unlimited space and all that stuff. It's about how much space does all this stuff take up? And maybe she also runs a little bit better if she's not always at full capacity memory. I mean, we just don't know. So that's what I think.
I know I'm having a certain issue with my phone right now.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems to get better when I delete, even though, you know, it's essentially, it's not physical memory. It's not a disk. It's just in bits and bytes.
Clear the cache.
You know, so the other thing you mentioned about was like, he thought it was a defragging thing.
Maybe.
I don't know. We don't know enough to really know. Like, I get what you're saying. I don't agree, but it's okay. You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate what you're trying to say. And who knows? Maybe we'll find out in some short trek or something, but probably not, though, at this point.
Yeah, that would be kind of sad.
Yeah, it would be. But anyway, like I say, we'll just agree to disagree and stay friends. And he's got another point, actually. And I grouped up a couple of points on Ethan Peck's robotic movements. So Mike had something to say about that. And then Sven, who actually brought up the point originally, had something to say coming back on it. So, and that he included in today's feedback, but I'm adding it here, of course. So Mike in Cleveland says, Brian and Ruthie, you guys are completely missing the point on what those of us criticizing Peck's robotic movements in episode 10 are talking about. We get he is a Vulcan and has emotional restrictions. What we are seeing in this episode is the actor decided to walk around with a stiff torso for some reason. Please rewatch how he is walking as he escorts Burnham to the chair, or his posture as he is sitting next to Michael during their heart-to-heart apology moment. Okay, I didn't have a chance to go back and watch that, but I will take that under advisement. One thing I brought up on the Facebook group was that I listened to a couple of episodes of The Well Pod, and that's that podcast that Anson Mount does. And on there, Ethan Peck mentioned about a motorcycle accident he was in at one time. I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility, but if you recall, sometimes the way that Riker moved, and actually James brought this up on the Facebook group too, some of the crazy things like the Riker maneuver and all that, and the way that he kind of strut around kind of stiff, a lot of that was because Jonathan Frakes has a bad back. So, you know.
So Ethan Peck might have a rod in his back or something.
Who knows? I mean, who knows? Like, he wasn't in a motorcycle accident. It sounded like in the motorcycle accident, he wasn't seriously hurt, but, you know, he could have had back problems. I mean, we don't know. That anyway, that's not an explanation. That's speculation on my...
Supposition.
Yeah, that's supposition. Mike, I will go back probably at the end of the season at this point and rewatch. I may do that before, but I will rewatch. And when I rewatch that episode, I'll let you know. So I'll just finish this one. Sven from Berlin, he responded as well. He says, I wasn't criticizing Ethan Peck for his performance in general. It was simply his robotic body movements in that particular episode. In general, I am Team Ethan Peck, a more than fitting Spock that has to slip into the Vulcan mind and body set every now and then. Okay, let's leave it at that. All right, son, we will.
All righty. I think maybe we probably just got distracted by the fact that a lot of people always make the same comments. So, sorry, guys.
Yeah, I think you're right. Actually, we took it to mean emotionally or whatever, not physically. So point taken. Obviously, both of you guys saw that. And I'll certainly be looking at it next time I watch.
I totally did not see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I should say it didn't stand out to me.
Yeah.
And honestly, if things like that don't stand out to me, I don't really want to go back and find them, because then I can never not see it. Like the lens flare thing that everybody talks about.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see that until someone said, here, look. And I was like, dang it. So if I didn't see it the first time, I don't really want to.
All right. So let's move on to this episode.
All right.
Season 2, episode 12, which is titled Through the Valley of Shadows, written by co-producers Bo Young Kim and Erica Lippold.
Mm.
They have written several episodes at this point. They're also involved very heavily on the Section 31 series.
Cool, cool.
Some have called them showrunners. I do not know if they are showrunners. I know they are creators, but I don't know that they are showrunners of that. The reason why I say that is because they're not that experienced. So usually the position of showrunner is someone who's been around the business for 15 years or something like that. Like you move your way on up. So it's possible, but I think probably they're going to be like co-executive producers or something like that when the time comes, and they'll be creators, but I don't know that for sure. And it's still a few years away. So directed by Douglas Arnie Okoski. And I believe he also directed the episode that they previously wrote this season. And he also directed their short trek. So seems like they've been working together a lot.
Collaboration
is right. Episode 6, The Sound of Thunder. And they also collaborated on the third short trek, which was titled The Brightest Star. That was the Saru one.
Oh, that one.
So this is their third time working together. They wrote Into the Forest I Go. Now, Douglas Arnie Okoski did not direct that one. He directed episode 6 last season, Lethe. But yes, he did direct The Sound of Thunder, and they wrote The Sound of Thunder. Anyway. Okay. So the description from CBS.com is a fourth signal leads the USS Discovery to an insular world where Pike is forced to make a life-changing choice. At this point, you should all know that I'm going to hit that button. Burnham and Spock investigate a Section 31 ship gone rogue, leading to a discovery with catastrophic consequences. Look at that little pun. Leading to a discovery. I love that.
Mm.
And that was TV-14 with a violence tag, released April 4th, 2019. As far as the 47s, there was one 47, fourth red signal of 7. But other than that, that was the only one I found. And I didn't find that right away. So let's move on to our rating. So Ruthie, what would you give Through the Valley of Shadows?
I am going to give this one a 9.6.
A 9.6.
Yep.
Excellent.
That's my arbitrary rating.
Well, I am also going to give this a 9.6.
Ooh.
So that would mean, or should we say, oops, that's nice. And I will call this Auto Antonym Games. All right, so we have some listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you start?
All right. Brian from Hawaii says 9.8 parts to play.
Ah, that is a phrase we've heard a lot of this season.
Mm-hmm.
Sven from Berlin says, I'll give it 9.5 out of 10 sad Anson Mount fans that will mourn him next season for quite a while. But I guess we haven't seen the last of him. Indeed.
Do that, yo. I'm going to have some serious mourning.
I will too, especially after this episode.
Yeah.
This one really got the feels.
Mm-hmm. Totally got me right in the feels. James the Sailor says, this episode gets 7.25. I'm an engineer, not a poet.
It's very fitting, James, that you quoted Jet Reno.
Mm-hmm.
I even asked him, I'm like, you have been waiting and docking all the episodes because of no Jet Reno, and then she's back and you only give it a 7.25.
I know. Come on, man.
He explains it in his feedback later, but yeah, I had to call him on that. LT from NC gives this episode a 9.999 dead nerve endings.
Word. Ken from Chicago says 8 out of 10 blue but formerly orange lights.
Oh, hi, Brian and Ruthie. This is Cyberman for a Discovery episode 12, Into the Valley of Shadows. I'm giving this episode a 10. Burnham never stopped firing her phaser at the AI on the Section 31 ship. Yeah, it's a long rating, but she never stopped firing that phaser. That made me very happy, because isn't that what you would do? You would empty that thing. So anyway.
And Cyberman, you said it a lot better than I could. So thank you, Cyberman. More on her feedback later.
All right. Mark from Ontario, Canada says 7 acceptable guestbook calligraphic fonts.
Editor's note. Rick from Cleveland, I'm having to put in your feedback after the fact. You did get it in plenty of time, but there was an issue with the feedback form. So I would recommend to people for next week, don't use the feedback form. Instead, send us an email at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. So all of your feedback, Rick, I'm putting in after the fact. But anyway, for his rating, Rick gives it, wow, another incredible episode. 9.9 smart aleck little brothers tagging along on your road trip out of 10. And Fred, I don't know if Fred gave his feedback in his episode. Yeah, if he gave his episode rating in his feedback or not. But you may hear it later. All right. So that is it for our ratings from listeners. So let's move on to our yeses.
Yes.
All right. You want to take the first one?
Brian from Hawaii says Pike's view of his future. And he also says, glimpse of the D7 ship, strikingly spectacular visuals on Borth, black and red shuttlecraft paint job, Jet Reno is back, Tenevic character, we get to see the Enterprise next week.
Yes, but that's skipping ahead. Okay, James the Sailor, he says, D7 appearance. It's nice to see some of the more classic ship designs on the show. While the tech updated are fine, I've always wondered why ship designs in general seem to have a drastic reimagining, especially for the Klingons. James, I have to agree with you on that point. At least the Federation starships seem to look Federation-like, but the Klingons, they went way, way different on them. So I totally agree with you on that one. He continues. He says, Pike's BP chair. It makes me wonder, though, we've seen that they were able to rebuild Arium with augments. So when Pike has this accident, is it his choice to take the BP chair, or does the tech get set back due to the security issues we've seen with Arium and the AI?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting thoughts. Either could make sense. Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, this is one of those things that we know it's canon. So it's like they can't really change it. But technology, even in 2019, is more advanced than a beeping chair.
True.
Especially when you have Stephen Hawking, when he was alive, he had a chair that he could form words with, you know, I think it was based on eye movement or something. And there are other people that have that kind of thing. So to me, that beeping chair is too primitive, but they have to show it because it's canon. So,
yep,
it is what it is. It's because of 1966.
Yep. Blame the 60s.
Yep. We should. There's a lot to blame there.
True.
He continues. He says, of course, he says, Jet. Did I mention she's my favorite character? Well, not this episode, but more screen time, please. Also, she kind of speaks to Stamets like a subordinate. Had she been made Chang off screen? I don't know, but She is a commander with 3 pips, and I know he's 2.5 pips, so he's a lieutenant commander. So, so maybe. Also, love her opening up to Culber about her relationship with her wife to give him a different perspective on his situation. And the way I look at that is, of course, she used engineering to work on people in the first episode. You know, she was just, you know, hacking the body, so to speak. And she's basically hacking therapy. Similar kind of thing. But it is kind of funny. She's kind of acting there a little bit like Cornwell was a couple of episodes ago. But hey, it's got Jet Reno. Jet Reno is funny and she's smart and she's also a plain talker. And everything she said to Culber was 100% correct. So.
Yep. He got her back, though. That was funny. Oh, my goodness. I like how the way that she was interacting with the crew and stuff, it seemed, I mean, it was as though she's been there the whole time. We just haven't seen her.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, her interactions with Linus. And
yeah,
I got a kick out of that game.
Yeah.
It's like, I hatched ready. That was funny. Yeah.
That's some kind of trash talk right there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next one.
Okay. Next we have LT from NC. LT says, Anson Mount, if they wanted the fans to beg for a Pike series, if they wanted me to repeat what a brilliant choice casting him as Pike was, this episode did it. We all knew what was coming for him, and seeing it play out in the Time Crystal Chamber and seeing their take on the beeping Dalek wheelchair, the look on his face when he saw the wheelchair, he sold that emotion and it was huge.
And I will just stop you right here. LT, I must say,
yeah,
best part of the episode for me.
And the melty face
thing. Yes.
That was
yes.
A little terrifying.
It was. Yeah, this whole scene, I thought it was amazing. It was well acted. It was just, can you imagine how Pike must have felt at that moment? And he's just had this horrifying moment. And he has to realize that either he accepts his fate and he has the time crystal, or he leaves the time crystal and he acts selfishly and can avoid that fate, but
maybe
no, yeah, or not.
That's the thing. We don't know. He doesn't know either.
Yeah. But no time crystal.
Right. So yeah. No time crystal and it might happen anyway.
Yeah.
That would suck.
I loved how we kind of like, logicked it out, you know,
yeah, gave himself a little pep talk.
Yeah.
That was pretty but awesome.
But yeah, I love this. To me, it worked so well, and it was just one of those like moments like, oh, they showed it. Oh, my God. So I totally agree. All right. He's got some more, though.
Okay. Next, he says, Spock and Michael still snark at each other. Now they are behaving like siblings who care about each other, but still take those little verbal pokes now and again. Jet Reno, relationship counselor. Seeing the bridge crew hanging out and eating chow. The continuing and ongoing saga of Tyler and Michael. Tonight we get the extra bonus of seeing them with the angry ex-girlfriend that had the baby. Who was commenting on CW drama?
Well, that would be Mike in Cleveland.
And, oh, that's funny.
I don't think we got any feedback from him this week. He only responded, and he's probably, you know, he's a truck driver, so he might have been driving today.
Yeah.
So we may get feedback from him tomorrow or later, you know, next week. We'll cover it, you know, we'll replay it next week, but yeah. As of the time of recording, we did not get any.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll carry on somehow. Yes,
we will survive.
But we'll be much devastated. Okay, next he says, the last 5 minutes of the show. They may end up throwing us a curve, but it feels like they are going to give us just what we hoped for. More Enterprise, more Number One, and solve the questions about the Spore Drive.
I agree.
Plus the shootout on the Section 31 ship. While it wasn't quite up to the Leland Giorgio slugfest, it was a pretty tense scene. It also gets a personal hold your horses.
Yeah, it did remind me. And again, this is not the right clip, but it reminds me of this person.
Get to the chopper!
Very Terminator. I was thinking a lot of T-1000.
Oh, really?
Terminator 2. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got a short one from Ken from Chicago. He says, great acting. I said that like a Chicago accent, accidentally. Great acting by Anson, Sinequa, Gregory, Wilson, Doug, and Tig. Agreed. Rick from Cleveland's yeses for this episode are, they went there. Holy crap, they went there. Pike's vision of his future was powerful. His selfless resolve after having experienced that horror may have just cemented him as my favorite captain. Sorry, Jean-Luc. Yeah, I gotta say, he's really getting up there. I mean, it's kind of funny. We are going to be getting Captain Picard coming to us later this year. And in a lot of ways, Pike is fulfilling that goodness of Picard in his role. So, I mean, I'll always love Jean-Luc Picard for sure, but definitely Pike, I tell you, he's made an indelible mark on Star Trek after Star Trek Discovery. Reno is back, delightfully snarky as usual. It was touching to hear a bit of her backstory and to see her hopefully help the guy whose name rhymes with poo find his way back to himself. Also, nice to see she seems to have assimilated into the crew. It's funny, I'll admit this. Rhymes with poo. I was like, I didn't clue in at the time, but it's like, yeah, his first name is Hugh. That rhymes with poo. And I kept on thinking back to Culber. How does that rhyme with poo? Anyway, so again, Ruthie's not here to hear these, so that's why you don't hear her laughing. But anyway, I'm sure she would have something to say about that. Kudos to Control for getting better at pretending to be human, emulating both emotion and PTSD. Even on second watch, he did not see clues until he started talking why he joined Section 31. And it seemed like Burnham didn't clue in on it either. But still, yeah, it all made sense at the end, but I certainly didn't pick up on it, although I should have. All right, so now for our yeses. What do you have?
I had that exact same thing!
Oh.
I wrote down the exact same thing.
Oh, that I wrote?
Yes! Holy crap, is that Delenn from Babylon 5? What did I write? Holy crap, that guy looks like Delenn from Babylon 5! That's what I wrote.
Yeah, and to explain that, Tenevic, he had this headgear on, and Delenn from Babylon 5, you know, the Minbari. I know you know this, Ruthie. I'm just explaining to everybody else.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, they had...
What season? Not the first season, but like, I don't know, some season she had hair again.
Yeah. And that's what it looked like. It looked like when she had hair and she still had the shell. And that thing looks so much like Babylon 5. I noticed it right away when it first came out. Like...
I was like, oh my God, what are they doing? They're channeling Babylon 5.
Ugh. What else you got?
I did not actually have that written down as a yes, but I wrote down nearly the exact same thing, so I had to say that.
Okay.
Might as well be a yes, because it's pretty awesome. I wrote down, when the fight gets real, they switch to Klingon. I thought that was hilarious. I was like, oh my gosh. It's like they're all like, oh, we're speaking in English because we're in front of the English speakers. But then suddenly, yeah, I thought that was hilarious.
Time to throw it down.
That's right. Hey, man, sometimes you can't curse as well as you can in your native tongue. So I also just wrote down Jet Reno and Hugh.
Yeah.
And that's all I got. That's what I got.
Beyond that, I think most of the people said the things that I was going to say. I will say may have been mentioned here, but the idea of Gant as Control, I'm just going to give props to Control for such a brilliant idea. Like, they basically, let's totally believe, you know, former crewman Gant, because I have sympathy for you because I killed your captain. And yeah, so I thought that that was a masterstroke of Control, but maybe not completely a yes, but certainly I wanted to give props for Control for some good thinking there. But anyway.
Yep. Cleverness.
I thought that Saru was kind of cool as acting captain there for a moment. So I'll give something to him. And in general, I did not even consider the idea that the monastery on Boreth has a double meaning. Not only is it like something for, you know, the followers of Kaelas, but also it has time crystals. So I thought that was interesting. It was certainly not something I would have thought of. It was kind of tacked on to what we already knew about the, you know, for that matter, maybe by the 24th century, all the time crystals are gone. Who knows? So maybe in the future, that whole part of it is gone. But, and the fact that Pike is interacting with Baby Vok the whole time, Tedavik is already, you know, a full adult. And for that matter, I'll give props to Kenneth Mitchell for now playing his third Klingon in this series.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. All right. So that's all I can think of for my yeses. So now it is time for Mr. Jean-Luc Picard and Sarek, in a way.
No!
Monsieur. Jean-Luc Picard.
All right. You want to read the first one?
Okay. I will, because I also had this one as a no, actually. My very first no ever. And it's eye needles. And I agree. Not freaking eye again. James the Sailor says, and then there was another damn eye needle in this episode. What's with this show and eye needles? I agree. I am not a fan.
Me neither.
Then LT from NC says, more attempted eyeball poking. If he had a syringe of nanites, why in the eye other than to make me yell at the TV?
I wondered that myself. It didn't make a lot of sense to me unless, I don't know, from the eye, there's like some
path to the brain.
Yeah. But like when Leland got his big injection of nanoprobes or nanites or whatever.
Yeah, but did he? Because it wasn't until the computer jabbed him in the back of the spine that he got all the stuff. What did he do? What was the purpose of the eye needle? Other than
I don't know.
Flick us out.
I don't know, but that's kind of my point, is that when he got stabbed in the back of the neck, it was to the spine. It wasn't through the eye. So I don't know what the first, but here Gant tries to stab her in the eye and with a big eye needle too. Like that's going to do some damage.
Yeah. An eye needle syringe full of, I'm having issues with that because I thought that the jab to the eyeball a couple weeks ago was just a most convenient way to kill him, because let's be honest, it really is a short path to the brain through the eyeball. So I thought for sure he was dead, and then he wasn't dead, and I was like, what? Why would he not be dead? I mean, okay. And then I saw why, and like the reason why he wasn't dead made sense, but the fact that the thing poked him in the eyeball, I don't know what the fascination with the eyeball poking is. I don't like it.
I don't either. I think one of the writers on staff must have got a horrible eye exam once. or a traumatic LASIK eye surgery. And, or something. Yeah.
You know, okay, see, and I don't know. I don't have a weird thing about eyes either. I mean, I have no problem doing contacts and all that kind of stuff. Poke myself in the eyeball, but when I poke myself in the eye, it's not with something sharp and pointy, so it's not as big of a deal. But you know, when you go, have you ever had like a I can't remember what it is, what kind of exam it is, but they basically, I don't know, but when you're at the eye doctor and they put this stuff on your eye,
yeah,
it basically numbs the feeling in your eye so that you don't have any feeling in your eyeball. And then they basically just press on your eye with something. And it's really weird because you know how, like, if you're looking at a plasma screen or something and you poke on it and it makes that little, like, warpy thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
That's what it looked like when they were poking on my eyeball with this thing. It made that warpy thing, except for it was on my eyeball. And I was like, that's so weird. And my eye was all numbed out and crap, so I couldn't feel anything. So I'm just sitting there going, wow, that's so weird. So I don't have a specific phobia or issue or what have you with eye stuff, but dang, man, they are definitely testing the limits of that.
Yeah.
Here in this show, they need to calm down with that.
They do. I agree. All right. We have some no's from Brian from Hawaii. He brings up the most one that you had reacted to earlier. Way too many distracting lens flares.
I didn't see them.
Like, I saw, like, kind of like a foggy eye. I didn't see flares. Because they love those foggy eye, when the sun comes in through the window, it's kind of like a smoky look, kind of, but I wouldn't say that's a lens flare. So I don't know. I will have to go back and look. And of course I'll be looking for it. And then once I find it, I'll be, oh.
So yeah, that's why I don't go back and look.
Yeah. No mention of how Tyler recovered from his stab wound. Yeah, it's obvious that some time had passed between the last episode and this episode. But yeah, it was very hand wavy. I mean,
I just figured he recovered.
I mean, the question would be, does he still have two hearts or does he just have one? Because Klingons, they have two hearts, so you can stab in the one heart and they still keep going.
Wow, totally like Time Lords.
Then he says, use of spore drive again. And I don't have a problem with them using the spore drive because they have the spore drive, but we have to get to the point where they can't use the spore drive anymore or the ship's destroyed or whatever. I will say that this was the least obvious use of the spore drive ever. Like, this long shot. When did they use the
spore drive this episode?
That's how they got to Boreth. And it was so, like, we didn't see them, you know, going to Black Alert or anything like that. We didn't see the spinny, rotating ship. Like, it just simply dropped in on Boreth, and we see it in a very long shot. So, yes, they use the spore drive again. Like I said, I don't have a problem with it, but they will have to explain in the next two episodes getting rid of said spore drive. So that's what I'm expecting to have happen in the next couple of episodes. No more
spore drive. Well, it could be longer than two episodes.
It could be next season, you know, or whatever. It could be till end of the series. But at some point in time.
Before the series ends.
No sporey spore. Okay. Saru just lets Michael and Spock go behind Pike's back. I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it.
That's not going behind Pike's back. He said he didn't want to take the Discovery there.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
That's not going behind someone's back. That's finding an alternative solution.
Yeah. And Saru was in command at the time. So, you know, it is part of his purview, especially if they're like having quote unquote joint custody of Discovery. I would say that that Saru has the purview to be able to grant.
My Saturday and I say you can go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's funny. Now we just need to fight about that in Klingon.
There you go. Lastly, too much channeling of the Terminator in the Section 31 control subplot. There you go. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. I need a full Terminator sound effect, but until then, of course, I'll go back to
Get to the Chopper!
A classic from Predator, but that's okay.
Yeah.
All right. Next.
Okay. Next we have James the Sailor says his no is the subplot on Borth. It felt more Game of Thronesy to me than Trek. I love GOT, but let's let Trek be Trek. It's like turkey trying to be bacon. It's really funny. Yeah. Oh, but it's so true. Turkey bacon is not bacon. Okay.
Yes, it is not.
Anyway, he says that entire subplot seemed out of place. And what do time crystals have to do with the Temple of Kalis anyway? This and a couple other things were why my rating is low this week. Aw, that's too bad. I don't know that it really has anything to do with it, but to me it seems like it's just a convenient place to put the temple. And also, just, you know, let's make it a dual purpose thing. Because it's a lot easier to keep people out due to religious reasons, I think, than don't go there because there are time crystals, but we don't want people to come. Yeah. And if you say, don't show up because we've got time crystals,
people are going to show up.
Yeah, that's like, I don't know, trying to get the paparazzi not to follow you around by saying something completely juicy. I don't know.
Yeah, and I was curious after what Tedovic said that I want to see some of the people that tried to see their future and went nuts.
Yeah, I didn't. That was one thing that I was like, well, what if you don't have an exciting future? What if nothing bad happens to you? I mean, why does that automatically mean that you're going to lose your marbles? I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe like that curse, may you live in interesting times.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you touch the time crystal, it makes you live have a spectacular death. You will not fall asleep, die in your sleep or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Who knows? Maybe. But I was thinking, why does everybody have to have a spectacularly terrifying future? I don't know.
Or slip in the bathtub or choke on a chicken bone. or both.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, I hadn't thought of it until you said this, James. But, you know, I do get your Game of Thrones reference here, because it was kind of, what's his name? The Third-Eyed Raven.
Oh, right. That kid.
Yes, that kid.
I know who you're talking about.
Bran. Yeah, Bran Stark.
Bran, yeah.
Yeah.
That kid.
Yeah. But it was very Game of Thrones-like to, you know, see the future and all that. So it, after you said that, I'm like, yeah, this kind of Game of Thrones like, so.
Yeah, but they don't have the corner market on that. It's not like they copyrighted it and no one else can do future watching stuff.
Besides, I didn't see an ice dragon. Man, that's or coming up, you know.
Zombie ice dragon.
It's only 9 days away. So there will be a 1 week overlap with, this show and Game of Thrones, so.
That's okay. They air on different nights, so yeah, it's all good.
They are.
Now they do.
Yeah.
Now that it's not on Sunday night anymore. Discovery, that is.
Yeah.
Okay. His final no is the aging of what's his name? I guess that would be Laurel and Volk's kid.
Yeah, Tenevic.
It just seemed unnecessary to me and falls into that GOT type subplot. Gosh.
What? You don't want to find out that...
I totally thought, to me, it was more wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey.
I thought it was, like I said earlier, it was something I would not have thought of, that baby Vok is grown up. Didn't think of that, but I did like the example of the vine that instantly grows. So
yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
I did like it. I mean, it made sense to me. If you have all these time crystal doohickeys hanging around your area, then time is not going to necessarily go in the direction you expect it to go.
Yeah.
So it made sense to me, and I thought it was very appropriate, personally.
All right. We got one from LT from NC. He says, Mary Chifo's prosthetics. Come on, guys. I don't know if it is the dental appliances or the way the makeup fits her, but she sounds like she's doing a Godfather imitation. She does an amazing job as that character, but something about the makeup just kills it for me. I'm guessing what you mean is the dental appliances part, not so much the, well, I guess that's part of the makeup, but yeah, I mean, it was mentioned before on this podcast about like, they talk like they've got marbles in their mouths. And
yeah, I'm sure it's hard to talk around those teeth.
Yeah. I mean, I think the makeup is better than it was, but I would agree for
especially the Delenn effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was super cool.
Yes. Yes, it was.
I can't believe no one else thought of that. Maybe they didn't. They just didn't say.
Well, maybe our listeners haven't watched Babylon 5 or haven't watched it in a long time. I don't know. But it is.
Yeah, but I haven't watched it in a long time either, but I still immediately thought of that. I don't know. If they haven't seen it, that is shameful. You should definitely take care of that right away.
Yes, I agree. It is a great show. Some of the visual effects are a little outdated, but it's still, I think it's still a great show. And it is now on Amazon Prime.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. It's good. But watch it. You'll see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha. All right. Ken from Chicago says, Control waited before attacking Michael and letting Spock scan the ship. Okay. Laurel's sclera matching her skin color, making her eyes look like pinpoints.
Hmm.
I agree.
Like what? Like beady eyes? Is that what he means?
Just her eyes were very, they just looked really
odd.
I don't know. Teeny tiny.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I
don't know. That's up. Rick from Cleveland has notes as well. He says, no, Tilly, how does that happen? Yeah. You know, and I said somewhere in the episode that I thought that there was Tilly in this episode. And just to correct myself right now.
Incorrect.
I was wrong. There was no Tilly in this episode. I thought that she was in the mess hall, but she wasn't. All right. What did you have for nose?
Just the eye thing.
Okay. Well,
I got.
I had something related, and that was the attack of the former Gant on Burnham. It turned into a whole like shapeshifter, Terminator, T-1000 blippy thing. I don't know. Bunch of like nanites. It was just weird. I thought that whole effect was kind of strange. So I guess this means that there is no hope for Leland. He's dead. He has to be dead after what we saw with Gant.
I would think so.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that whole thing was a little weird, even like stopping it with magnets.
Yeah, bitch! Magnets! Oh!
Which, although probably effective, just that whole thing was a little weird. I think that the Section 31 stuff was probably the weak part of the story. I wonder about when phasers are finally going to beam a continuous stream of energy versus this pew, pew, pew. But I did enjoy her firing, you know.
Double-fisted.
Double-fisted. Yeah.
Me too. I was like, yeah, double fist.
Yeah. But I can't think of anything beyond that to say.
I agree about the Section 31 stuff. I kind of felt, I was like, man, why are they chasing after this one ship?
Well,
why is that significant? What's going on there?
The other thing too, I guess with that is like, they're talking, right? And I'm thinking to myself, can't Control hear them?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I think I wrote that down somewhere. I wrote down, where did I write that down?
And for that matter, how was Spock able to set up, you know, a workstation where Control was isolated and
separate from Control?
Yeah.
So I wrote down, with all of the sensors on board ships, once Control is aware of them, how could they ever hide?
And, you know, how was that strategy going to work anyway? Like
who suggested that? Did Gant actually suggest that?
Mm,
making the partition or whatever in the cage?
Yeah, I think he did.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, like, how could you ever set something up like that and be secret from the computer that's monitoring you?
Yeah.
I mean, if your computer is aware, wouldn't it know if you set up a partition?
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, you know, it's hearing you do all these things and, you know, clearly it's going to know that you've tried to set up this area. And for that matter, like, how did it even let them know that Gant was, you know, infected with Control? Like, it just, like, I would think that Control would have blocked that somehow and not allowed Spock to figure that out. It just, that's what I, because he's connected to their technology, their state, a workstation. So how did he isolate it? I didn't understand that.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like trying to set up a computer that is air gapped after it's already been connected to the internet.
Yeah.
You can't really do that.
Yeah.
It's too late. It's connected to the internet.
Yeah.
It's like any exposure that it has, any nasty viruses or whatever, it's already happened.
Yep.
So that didn't make sense to me. I was like, it's too late for the Faraday cage because.
Yeah, it's kind of like deleting a virus from a system and not installing any antivirus and then just plugging it back in the internet into the internet and expecting it not to happen again.
Yeah. Using the same program again.
Yeah.
I don't understand how we got infected again. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that whole computer stuff didn't make much sense to me. I was like, I might not be a tech genius, but some of this stuff doesn't quite ring true.
Yeah, and that's where the show loses me in points has to do with the tech. You know, it seems like most of the time when I have an objection like this, it has something to do with tech or, you know, like the point I think James said, I think it was James about the, beeping chair. It's like, okay, it's just one of those 50 some odd years kind of thing. You know, it's like, actually it wasn't him that said that. It was,
Someone said it.
Someone. You know who you are.
That's right. You know who you are.
Yes. But
I feel like they should have like a tech advisor or something. Like,
they probably do, but
they need someone better. Yeah.
Yes. Here I am. Come and get me. I will do it.
I mean, I feel like I can even do a better job. I'm like, I don't even have a computer science degree or anything like that. And I feel like I would be like, no, that you can't do that.
They should get the guy that does the tech or did the tech for Mr. Robot.
Yes.
Yes. Now he knows what he's doing and he gets the tech.
That guy knows some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've heard him interviewed on podcasts before, and he knows some stuff.
They actually have real code.
Yeah.
In the show. It's not just like gobbledygook gibberish that's being thrown up there. It's like real actual code.
Yeah.
It's really cool. And they don't make it all exciting and stuff the way that most people do when they're hacking. Like somehow you're up against a clock.
Yeah.
That's not really how it works.
That's not how it works. Unless you're in some kind of competition or something, but.
Right, but most of the time, that's not what he's doing. He's just kind of sitting there on his computer. And
unless the computer that you're coding has a bomb on it.
Right. Or if you're doing like the, did you ever see Swordfish?
A long time ago.
Like the whole Hugh Jackman thing where he had to do something or whatever in a certain amount of time. Most of the time, that's not what happens, though. It's not the case. It's not like you have a time limit. Just kind of sit at your computer and do your stuff, and it's not super exciting.
That's not how it works.
Yeah. But anyway, I agree. That guy, he knows his stuff.
Yeah.
He totally straighten these Trek people out about how if your computer is self-aware, you can't really make it not be self-aware. So don't look over here. Look over there. I'm going to do something over here real quick, okay? Yeah. Oh, man. That's funny. All right. Anyway, Yeah, where did we leave off?
Cor Adana is the guy that worked for Mr. Robot.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
That guy's good.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to our favorite section.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
Ha ha.
For obvious reasons.
Yep. Where was Tilly this episode?
She wasn't in there very much, that's for sure.
Yeah, she was
hiding out. She was in the mess hall scene, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
But nowhere else.
Incorrect.
Auto antonyms?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. I like her.
All right, why don't you give Brian's?
All right, Brian from Hawaii says, was Pike actually in the future while he was on Boreth? Is that why Tenevic it was so old? Also, why didn't this time effect happen to Worf when he went to Boreth? I was surprised to see that some monks had shaved their heads, even though the monastery is a peaceful, sacred site.
Hmm. I didn't notice about the shaved heads.
I think it was the guy with the vine.
Hmm. Maybe. Maybe he's just bald.
Yeah. I seem to recall. Maybe his male pattern baldness.
Yes.
Oh, yes. My goodness. And he decided just to shave his head so he doesn't have that crazy widow's peak thing going on.
And that's got to be a tough thing for a Klingon to be bald because, well, okay, we had Chang, but, you know, one would think that Chang probably continued to shave his head because he thought that they were in a state of war. Star Trek VI, that Chang. Cry Havoc? That one. Anyway.
The Dogs of War.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know as far as the time effect with Worf. That's why maybe the thought that I had about all the time crystals being gone by that time is possible. I don't know. Maybe they destroy all of them because it's bad. I don't know. As far as was he actually in the future, I don't think he was. I think he just saw a vision of it.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah. By the way, I saw some promotional pics. Pike has gone a lot more gray since the start of the season. he's a lot more gray now. So, all right. James the Sailor says, Pike's beepy chair. While it was a nice nod to us longtime fans, it seemed a little unnecessary because we already know he's going to end up in it. And might confuse new fans if the questions I posed in my yeses aren't addressed. Why didn't he get the Arium treatment, I guess?
Hmm.
Now, this is what I said. I disagree. I love this. Maybe I was looking away on the first watch, because my first watch was on my phone. My second watch was on the big screen. Oh. But I missed the chair the first time. So when I saw it on the second watch, because I wasn't expecting it, I was blown away. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I actually wrote down, so could that be what landed him in the chair? Oh, yes.
Yep.
That was funny.
How is Control infiltrating all these ships? Why do their firewalls not work? Seriously, we have better security in the 21st century than in the 23rd. Or the viruses are stronger. In the 23rd.
I don't know.
The D7 appearance is also an HYH, as he calls it, because it was built just way too quickly. How do you build a ship of that size and have it in regular service that quickly? The thing was just announced a few months prior. Construction alone should take more than a few months, and it should need a proofing period before carrying the Chancellor. Was it built and proofed on Boreth? LOL. Just seemed a bit rushed in having it appear, and that was my thought, is that maybe it was built on Boreth, because that would make it possible, you know. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I would think it would take at least, even in, you know, 23rd century purposes, I would think it would take at least a couple of years, at least a year anyway, to build things up. Like, if you think about how long it took the Federation in the 24th century to start building Borg purpose-driven ships, it took them quite a while. It was about 5 or 6 years before we started seeing the Defiant and, you know, the Sovereign class and, you know, some of the other ones.
Yep. Okay. LT from NC says, so of all the Section 31 ships and all the crews on those ships, the one that Michael and Spock run down happens to have one guy from the Shenzhou that Michael knows. That made me suspicious right off the bat. The stream of nanites that... Right. Exactly.
Sorry, but it was appropriate.
Yeah. The stream of nanites that ran out of the big gaping phaser hole. Maybe it's a good thing that they didn't shoot Leland Moore back on the planet. Oh, man. I'm pretty sure it was Gant that caused whatever it was, whatever anomalous thing that happened that made them go and check that ship out. So not really, I mean, yeah, kind of a coincidence, but.
Well, maybe, you know, that's. It wasn't a coincidence. It was they control figured that Burnham would go after them. So yep. It intentionally missed its checkoff.
Yeah.
And
in order to bait her.
Right. Yeah. So I think there was some intent there. It wasn't just a coink-a-dink.
Yeah. But I guess LT is saying that
it was a coink-a-dink.
No, that made.
Yeah, it did make him suspicious. Yeah, and I think that's a good point.
Yeah, and probably right about shooting Leland Moore, because I don't think they could have magnetized the surface of the planet.
Yeah. All right, and strangely, another Babylon 5 point got brought up, but it was not the lead thing. So that's kind of funny. Yeah. Ken from Chicago, he says, on hashtag Babylon 5, the actress who played the alien Narn assistant to Jakar commented how her replacement when she was on hiatus was a little stiff because the replacement kept eye contact when listening to Jakar. She said in real life, people break eye contact in return. I would say that's true. Yeah. Mary Chifo keeps eye contact as Laurel when listening to Ash, and it comes across as stiff. Plus, she doesn't blink. On the one hand, it can be intimidating or it can feel stiff. Ash can feel stiff dealing with Laurel because it's an unusual relationship, hashtag awkward.
No kidding.
And then he further explains, he says, by the way, the actress on hashtag Babylon 5 wasn't criticizing her replacement, but saying the same happened to her when she started acting. That with so much prosthetics, it was tempting to just keep eye contact, but she saw in playback it looked rigid. And then he says the same happened with the Tenevic. I don't know. I tend to think that this is kind of how the Klingons are in this envisioning. So they like to maintain eye contact, you know? Much like a cat. Not that they're cat-like, but...
Also, I think it's kind of a dominance thing.
Yeah, I think it is too.
They're trying to be intimidating, because that's what they are.
I forbid it. Yeah. Rick from Cleveland also has some hold your horses. Did Pike really just tell the Klingon Chancellor, who we were just at war with, that we have rogue AI that we cannot control trying to kill everyone? I'm sorry, any other Klingon Chancellor I know would be sending every warrior they have to open up a can of whoop-ass. Spock, if you make the magnet too powerful, it will still work. Yeah, I thought about that after the fact. And I don't know, maybe there was something with the magnet that also the magnet also had to block any communication or something. That's the only way I could see that working, but that wasn't stated. So, yeah, I agree. All right. What do you have for Hold Your Horses? Do you have anything?
I do not.
Okay. So something Saru said, he said 30 ships, nearly their entire fleet. Does that mean Section 31's fleet is 31 ships?
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, what? There are 30 ships in Section 31? I feel like there should be 31 ships.
Yeah, I noticed it, and I had to bring it up. And I mentioned about the continuous beam. Is this how phasers get a continuous beam when they, you know, go through the reports and they see, you know?
It would have been so much better if.
Yeah. Yeah. Because clearly they have a continuous beam, you know, just a few years later. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can turn it up and melt stuff. So.
Yes. Yes, you can.
They could have just melted the nanite thingies.
There you go. Be like the conspiracy.
What conspiracy is that?
The conspiracy aliens. Remember when Picard and Riker took their beams and basically directed all of the energy at like the conspiracy, the, what was his name? Remick, his head, and exploded it.
Not remember that.
You don't remember that? Well, you probably remember this. This, I brought up conspiracy.
There's a conspiracy out there. You know what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N conspiracy.
Oh, man.
Haven't, it's funny, considering Control in Section 31, we haven't used that much this season, if at all.
Heard that in years.
I know. And it's kind of funny because I've been still using it even to this past week. I used it several times on The Walking Dead Doctor. So you're missing out on that.
Oh, man. C-O-N.
Spiracy.
C. Why did we start using that anyway? I can't remember.
I don't know. There was something. Oh, you know what I think? I think I first brought it up because of the van in season 5, the van that didn't flip.
Ugh.
I think that's why.
The van that nosedived off the bridge and landed on its wheels.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could have been something
the dumpster.
Yeah, or it could have been that. I'm pretty sure I was using it before that. Or it could have been something that Gabriel did. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
who knows?
Don't mean to spoil anything for you people that haven't been, you know, caught up on The Walking Dead. But anyway.
Anywho.
All right. So now it is time for our feedback section, and we'll go with opening Hailing's frequencies again. All right. So we've got a few voicemails. So our first one is from Cyberman.
Oh, hi, Brian and Ruthie. This is Cyberman for a Discovery, episode 12, Into the Valley of Shadows. I'm giving this episode a 10. Burnham never stopped firing her phaser at the AI on the Section 31 ship. Yeah, it's a long rating, but she never stopped firing that phaser. That made me very happy, because isn't that what you would do? You would empty that thing. So anyway, another big yes for me was Tyler and Laurel arguing. They argued like a couple, and they went seamlessly from English to Klingon. It was so well done. I mean, they just kept ratcheting it up, and they went from English into Klingon, and now they're yelling at each other, and it's like, ah! Oh, it was just so good. It was so real. It was amazing. The other thing I really thought was great was Anson Mount, after he discovered his future, Captain Pike's future. He was in the ready room. He was talking to Laurel and Tyler about their son and basically giving them solace. Their son's an honorable man. He's happy with his life. His destiny was with God, the time crystals. So he was giving them something. But at the same time, you could see that Pike was really struggling, was freaking out inside. He was having a he was visibly shaken by what he learned about his future. And he did it anyway, because that's what Captain Pike would do. So I really thought that was great acting. And it wasn't until the captain sat back in the chair again that he became Captain Pike. So it was very well done. Any Spock and Burnham scene is worth watching. That was great fun. Culber and taking the sick bay was really hysterical. So that was very sweet and lovely. And I did not expect the tactical officer from the Shenzhou to turn out to be the AI when Burnham and Spock were on the 31 ship and found the body floating. I did not expect that. That was kind of brilliant of the AI, actually, to use someone Burnham knew to help perpetuate the illusion in case they could tell. I mean, he was testing them on every level to see if he could pass, but it was really interesting that he used someone Burnham knew. It was quite brilliant. It fooled me as well. So it's going. I don't quite know where it's going to go, but it's really going well. I think Discovery's doing a great job this season, of course. I keep saying that. I was wondering about the time crystal, because with the time crystal, I was wondering if that was the reason that Burnham's parents were killed. Not because the Klingons, who do not know about the monastery on Boroth and what their real purpose is, not that they just want a time suit, but it could be that Section 31 stole a time crystal and the monks had to come retrieve it, and that's what got Burnham's parents killed. So that's just another element there. Anyway, have a great week. Thanks, guys.
That is a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but I have to definitely give you props on that thought. And, of course, you get... Thank you so much, Cyberman, for that insightful voicemail. Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that, but that makes total sense that Section 31 or agents of Section 31 stole the time crystal, and the Klingons went back to retrieve the time crystal and ended up, because, I mean, let's face it, like, we may have heard a truth from Leland, but it may have not have been the truth. It may have been that they stole it. So not just that there was one on the market, but they stole it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I mentioned this earlier, but I thought it was brilliant that Control pick Gant. And I had noticed it mentioned on another podcast as well, which I may have not said earlier, but I kind of went, yeah, that was a good idea for them to do that. Or it to do that, I guess, would be more accurate.
Yep.
Anything you want to add?
I feel like there was something, but I can't remember.
I did like what she said about that you would keep shooting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely would keep shooting.
Yeah.
I would be. And it's not, I mean, it definitely should be a continuous beam, because it's not like it's a gun with the bullets in it, you know, where you have to keep pulling the trigger to make them go off. So yeah, continuous stream is definitely better.
Yes. All right. So let's move on to our next bit of voicemail. It is from Mark.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Ruthie. Mark from Ontario, Canada here with my feedback for Through the Valley of Shadows. I give this episode 7 acceptable guessbook calligraphic fonts. So I guess we now know why there were blue crystals floating around in the intro sequence each week. Now let me get started with my yeses, nos, and hold your horses. So first, the yeses. Saru showing his captainship. I don't know if that's even a word. I like that. I hope he's captain and Michael's his number one for next season. And the other thing I really liked is right after that little talk where Michael got permission from Saru to go on her mission, the image transition between Saru's face looking at her to the planet Boreth, and the rock formation right where Saru's face was represented it. Meaning you saw Saru's face, and when it faded to the rock formation, you saw a crack in the rock where Saru's mouth was. You saw shadows where his eyes were and a protrusion where his nose were. So I really, really like that. I thought it was really well done. If you didn't notice that, go back and watch it again. Now, my nose. Why did Gant's voice change once Michael figured out that he was Control? This is an AI. Why did it need to sound more menacing? And while speaking of Gant, we know that he can take several phaser fires. So why did he jump for cover as soon as Michael picked up hers? Why didn't he just approach her and keep on shooting? Now, another no is both Tyler and Laurel said that they weren't supposed to tell anybody about their son. And yet he freely tells Michael when she says, oh, what's the matter? And then Laurel tells Pike, when in fact nothing would have changed with the mission if they hadn't told Pike about their son. He would have gone down, met with the Klingons, probably gone through the whole thing, and got back. The fact that he was their son had nothing to do with the story at all. Now, my hold your horses. They were trying to purge Control by creating a separate startup system and luring it into that section. One, why wouldn't Control just take over that section as well? Why would it have to move its entire self over to that section? And two, why did Control actually fall for this, considering Gant was part of the ploy? I don't get it. Anyways, I like to be right in my theories, and it looks like they are going to try scuttling the ship like I predicted last week. But Michael was wrong. She said they are outgunned and it's their only option. But what about the spore drive? With it, they could have jumped anywhere in the galaxy, in the universe for that matter. And Section 31 would have had no way of finding them. So that didn't make any sense at all. But since nobody thought of the spore drive, Pike agrees with her plan. But they're in Klingon space. How close is Enterprise that it'll be able to help them with 30 Section 31 ships so close by? Now, last episode, Michael's mom said she didn't know anything about the signals, but that doesn't mean she isn't the one behind them. She may not have known about them, but then they told her about the signals, and now that her suit is destroyed, she may have thought to use them to her advantage, so she may be responsible for them after all. And finally, I don't understand how if Pike leaves the crystal, his future is undetermined, but if he takes the crystal, his future is set? That doesn't make sense to me. Anyways, this wasn't one of my favorite episodes this season. Looking forward to next week. Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
Well, thank you so much, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I think the thing, I don't know why taking the crystal would mean that's your future for sure. I don't know. I think maybe it could be something like, I don't know. I didn't really understand that either. I think it's like hand wave.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to go with wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
That is the answer for all time.
Yeah. For every time related issue, it's wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
You notice what I did there? I said for all time.
Yes, I did notice that.
Double meaning.
Mm-mm. Yes. Yep. Yep. It's very clever.
And to that, I have to say, Mark, well, of course it wasn't your favorites. There were Klingons in it.
Yeah.
You have already expressed how you do not like the Klingons. You didn't like the Klingons before, and you don't like the Klingons especially now. So, obviously, not going to be your favorite episode. So, even though, you know, it was a Klingon thing, I mean, you still gave it a 7.5, so not terrible. Or was it a 7? 7 or 7.5?
I don't know. Something.
7-ish. Anyway, I also hope that Saru at the end of this is the captain. Who else could it be? I mean, are they going to plop in somebody else? Are they going to bring in the real Lorca? That wouldn't be terrible, but I think Saru is ready to captain this ship.
The big chair.
Yes. And Burnham should be first officer, because I think we talked about this earlier. I don't think that Burnham is captain material yet. I think that she has to grow a little more, but I think Saru is ready.
Yeah. We definitely did talk about that before.
Yeah. I did not see this whole rock formation transition from Saru. I didn't see it, so I'm going to have to go back and look.
I didn't notice it either.
I, too, don't understand why Gant turned all digital when he started talking. It didn't make a lot of sense.
I kind of tend to think that was maybe something for the audience. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe to make it more obvious that he was not human.
Yeah, maybe to those people who were not aware.
Paying attention.
Or something. Yeah, or something. You're like, oh, what was that?
I also agree on it's a secret about Baby Vok, but I'll tell you anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's like, twist my arm.
I guess it was supposed to be secret from all of the Klingons, but how many Klingons do they know or something? I don't know.
Not many. We didn't see. It seemed like Laurel was traveling alone.
Yeah. I mean, how many Klingons does Michael know and how many Klingons does Pike know? It's like,
probably not.
Who are they going to tell, I guess, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
I will say, Mark, you said that you like to be right about your theories. I don't know anyone that likes to be wrong about their theories.
That's true. I don't either. I think most people like to be right.
Yeah, no, I do. Of course. Otherwise, why would you come up with them? You just say screw it. And
yeah.
Not try to predict. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think maybe the most insightful thing that you said, though, was, yes, the spore drive. Just leave. You know, it's like they made it seem like they couldn't do anything there, but all they had to do was leave, and they could go anywhere and, you know, end up in the Gamma Quadrant or the Delta Quadrant before the wormhole is discovered, or Caretaker did whatever he did, covering those two quadrants, of course. But my point, being that I see no reason why they couldn't just
jump out of there.
You know, if they went back to Terra Elysium, that's 51,000 whatever light years away. Simply going back there would prevent them from being, there's no way that the Section 31 ships without their own spore drive could go back there. Unless they had like a transwarp conduit or something, which they don't have. Yeah, I totally agree. That was a bit of a plot screw up there, I think. And for that matter, couldn't the Klingons help them? They're at Boreth, so they're obviously in Klingon territory. And for that matter, they're in Klingon territory, so all those Section 31 ships are going to advance into Klingon territory? That's kind of...
Yeah, that seems kind of iffy.
Not terribly believable. Yeah.
Seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
I would think that the Klingons would consider that an act of aggression.
I would think so.
But
even with Laurel being on the ship and knowing what's going on, I would think that the Klingons would not like this. So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't get the future set, but like you said, timey-wimey, you just have to accept it, I think. I'm willing to let it go. I don't want to get too hung up on that because...
Yeah, it's easy to get stuck in.
Yes.
A time travel loop.
One does not want to think about time travel too hard because it will kill brain cells.
Yeah, and sometimes it falls apart.
Yes.
Under scrutiny.
Yes.
I kind of tend to think that it wasn't necessarily, I mean, I think I said this earlier or something similar earlier where when Pike's giving himself the little pep talk, like I guess Tenevic made it seem like that wouldn't happen to him in the future if he didn't take the time crystal. But in my mind, he doesn't know that that won't happen if he doesn't take the time crystal. He's right. Just been told that it will happen if he takes the time crystal. So, like we were talking about earlier, it could be that not doing anything is just as bad, I guess, as doing something or whatever.
Maybe.
Something like that. I don't know.
Okay. We have one more voicemail, and that is from Fred from the Netherlands.
All right.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 12. I'm recording with my new construction of my microphone, which is hanging now freely and will probably give less disturbance and a better sound. I've listened to Mark's feedback, and the funny thing was he was referring to that Saru's face changed into the Boreth stony mountain structures, and I actually noticed exactly the same. Furthermore, I also agree, and I thought about the spore drive. Why don't they use it? They just jumped to Boreth, and even Reno was referring to that during their lunch. So nothing that's hindering them to use the spore drive. So I agree with Mark. Why didn't they use that opportunity? And the same to me as to Cyberman happened, that I didn't see it coming, that Gant was the new AI, so the new Leland, the new control. I really wonder if on these 30 Section 31 ships, if they're all controlled just by the AI, or is there still a normal crew there? Or is there a normal crew there under power of just one person who is invaded by the AI? Or is still Georgiou behind that? I have a big, big feeling, but I'm probably not the only one. This whole story will result in the short track story of Calypso. So instead of sending just the suit with all the sphere data to the future, sending Discovery with the sphere data to the future. And I think Mark's last week's hypothesis that there will be a Discovery type B, or probably more right, as you said, Brian, a type A. So NCC 1031A. Finally, I shortly want to come back to last week's podcast where I was complaining a little bit about that Michael was crying and being in the big dilemma of saving her mother and let her mother go. Of course, it was very well acted and the crying was okay. It was just too much duplicated from the situation with Arium, and that was my complaint. Okay, that's all for this time. I'm going to select my visual feedback now. I made 121 screenshots, so I have to select some nice ones. Okay, mm-hmm. Greets, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, Fred, thank you so much for everything you do. We say it every week, but...
Wow, yeah.
But we have to give it again. Thank you so much. And get well, because I know you've been not feeling well the last month or so. So hopefully you will take care of yourself, because as they always say, and I reminded this to him today, that they say that doctors are the worst patients. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, yes, get well. This must be a thing, because Fred noticed that too with the rock formation. So I'm going to have to go back and look. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up from Fred?
Oh gosh, I don't think so. I should have written it down, but I didn't.
Yeah, I can't think of anything specific either, but thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. So
awesome.
Our next one is a short one from Aaron from Akron. He says, and this is pretty funny. He says, beep once if you were stunned by this episode, beep twice if you were not.
That's good. Oh man, that is funny. Good times.
All right. Next we've got Teal from Vancouver. So we're going to act like Tyler didn't totally get stabbed the last episode. Okay. Oh my gosh. Gant's voice changes to scary control robot voice as soon as we discover he's a scary control robot. Okay. Loved the Jet Reno Colbert gay pep talk, but of course her wife is dead. Not okay. Mm. Yeah, I agree. The pep talk was pretty awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, it sucks that her wife has passed on. Mm-hmm. And
but a great perspective.
Did I understand like her wife was an alien?
I think so, maybe.
Yeah. I did not recognize that species.
Me neither. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No.
I mean, I don't recognize a lot of species.
All right. Next is Brian from Hawaii. He says, this episode made me even more excited than the one where they went to Talos 4. We got an even stronger tie-in to canon directly to the menagerie. The updated look for disabled Pike is great. But what was with all those uniforms Pike and his crew were wearing in his future vision? And I wonder that myself. We know he becomes a fleet captain, which I looked up. What is a fleet captain exactly? And supposedly it is chief of staff to a flag officer, or at least in, you know, current military. Hmm. But why that's a gray uniform, that is confusing to me. I mean, I heard mentioned on one podcast today that maybe that was a dress uniform. It was almost like a suit kind of coat he had. It wasn't just a like the current uniform. It was different, and it had those like weird epaulets on the shoulders.
Yeah,
and I think it was 5, which I think would probably be appropriate to a fleet captain, like an extra pip. I don't know either. And I was very confused the difference between a fleet captain and a commodore. But I think a fleet captain might work for a commodore. I don't know, but I was a little confused about that. But James, here's your chance, man. You can tell us. All right. Next.
Okay. Next is Sven from Berlin. He says, dear Ruthie, dear Brian, dear Trek freaks, I am sorry, but am unable to split this episode into up, downs, horses. Just one big up. I am just blown away by the quality of story, acting, writing, directing. It doesn't matter if an episode is close to 50 minutes long or just 37 like this one. It is packed with so much good stuff to explore for the viewer, that time flies no matter what. My only fear for next season is how on Earth, or in the stars for that matter, can you top such a season? I said it last week and I say it again and again. Why can any Trekker or Trekkie not appreciate what they are doing here? I am doing a loose rewatch of TNG and DS9 these days, and they still hold up. But production value and quality of Disco is so much higher than anything else on TV until now. I would even go so far as to compare Disco to the Abrams Trek movies with even better character arcs. Okay, Trek freaks, that's all. That is all for this week. Sven from Berlin. P.S. All of the above.
I would agree with what you said there about the look. I would certainly put it in the same ballpark as the Abrams movies in terms of look. I mean, I was showing some stills from that Fred took to someone who hadn't watched the show yet, and they were just blown away from the visuals. And it wasn't even, you know, I showed him a couple of visual effects shots, but I also showed him just some of the regular scenes and the lighting and the set direction and all that stuff. And it's such a beautiful show. I don't know of anything that comes close to it. Like even Game of Thrones, it doesn't look futuristic. So like it does a lot of things amazingly well, but it doesn't look futuristic. I think, of course, this show has that beat. So that's just my opinion, though. I don't think it was a 37-minute show, actually. I think it was like 46 or 45. So I saw that.
It's not including the end credits or something. I don't know.
Maybe, but it seemed definitely longer than 37. It wasn't the shortest episode of the season by far.
Or the shortest episode ever.
All right. Next is James the Sailor Man. This is just a short one, actually, because we covered most of his feedback already. But he said, this episode wasn't bad, but it really didn't stay in its lane to me. And I just wasn't feeling a lot of it. It is furthering the overall arc, but in ways that just seemed off to me. Maybe I need more viewings of this one, but even Jet wasn't able to change my feeling of something feeling off in this episode. It's got some good points, but overall, I'm treating this as a filler episode. They can't all be home runs. I would agree with that. They can't all be home runs, but I don't know. I thought this one was better than you did.
Yeah, me too.
Rick from Cleveland also had some feedback, and as I'm doing with the rest of his feedback, I'm reading it after the fact. Again, sorry I missed this. It was a bit of a snafu with the feedback form, and I did get it in time, but it was kind of mixed up with some more feedback, so I didn't clue in as to what this was. So sorry about that. That's why I'm reading these after the fact. Overall, I think Discovery seems to be outdoing itself each week, and this was no exception. One thing they need to close the circle for Pike is a scene between Pike and Spock where Pike somehow acknowledges that he knows what is to come, and Spock agrees to take him to Talos IV when the time comes. Whether Spock has seen what is to come or Pike just tells him that he will know when it's time, I believe Pike's sacrifice in accepting that awful fate to get the time explains Spock's commitment to his friend. The only thing I can say against that is in the menagerie, we keep seeing Pike when the discussion to go to Talos IV during that, you know, pseudo court martial, and I say pseudo because we realize after the fact that Mendez is not actually Mendez or whatever, but he keeps responding to for no all the way through. Like he doesn't want to go to Talos, that he doesn't want, I guess, Spock to do what he's doing. I don't know. So he's resisting. And then only at the end does he finally, you know, give a yes to go there. So that's the only reason why I would disagree with you on that, Rick. But maybe there's something to that. I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch The Menagerie. I watched it a few weeks back. But, you know, maybe there's something there that indicates it. I would like there to be some kind of scene to this. Looking forward to seeing more of Enterprise next week and hopefully Spock in uniform. Yes, Rick, I wholeheartedly agree with you and I want to see that too. And hopefully we'll see that early in the episode rather than later. Also, thanks to you, Brian and Ruthie, for mentioning Anson Mount's podcast. Catching up on it will fill the gap a bit once Disco goes dark for the season. Yeah, I've caught the Ethan Peck episodes. I haven't gone back there. There's also been a couple of Doug Jones episodes that I haven't listened to yet, and you know, other stuff that he's done. But it's a good podcast. I enjoy it, and it should be good. And of course, you know, hopefully at the end of the season, we'll get word that they've been planning a Pike Spock series all along, and they just haven't told us. So, but thank you so much, Rick. All right, that's it for our written feedback. Ruthie, what do you have for notes?
Let's see. Something that we haven't already talked about. Oh, I did have one thing. Spock using the neck pinch or nerve pinch or whatever.
Yes.
That was kind of illogical.
Right. Well, maybe he didn't fully realize that Gant had been completely basically his body had been completely taken over, that there was no system left at the time.
Yeah, but logically wouldn't make sense for him not to be completely taken over. I don't know. I just thought, I don't know. I mean, why would you even bother trying something like that? I guess he wasn't really around when they were fighting with Leland.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah, that's true. I guess he wasn't.
But still, though, I still feel like it wasn't logical to try and utilize something that works on living things, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe that should have been in a Hold Your Horses. I don't know. But anyway, yeah.
Okay.
I think that's pretty much all I've got.
Yeah.
So what do you got?
I've got nothing left.
Oh, well.
Yeah, as I was going through the feedback, it seemed like everybody had been picking up the kind of things I was picking up. So the only thing I can think of is that it seemed a little much that everything had been taken over by Gant, that literally his entire body was nanites at this point. That seemed a little far-fetched to me.
I don't think it was his entire body, though.
Certainly seemed like it when they all spilled out of him.
Well, there was a corpse that dropped to the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I guess
there was something left.
I guess it was something left, but maybe like an Easter bunny or something. Just oh, hollow chocolate around.
Oh, man. Solid chocolate is always better.
Always better. I used to get so mad when I was a kid and I'd get a bunny and it would be hollow.
Hollow. Dang it.
It's like, where did you get this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond that, I don't think I have anything more. I just move on to the next section.
All right.
Which is our shipwide announcements. All right. Well, this is the time when I usually mention that we had on the Ready Room today, Anson Mount was the guest. Yeah, he was really good on there, as you would expect. So he was actually not, like, I think pretty much all of them have been in the same room as Naomi Kyle, but this one, he was in Brooklyn. So I guess he lives in Brooklyn. So he was, you know, in New York and she's out in California. So they did it over Skype. So, but yeah. So anyway, I thought that was pretty cool. And there is a video that's been released. It's on YouTube, so you can see it there. But it's also, if you have CBS All Access, it's in one of the clips. And it's called Pike's Sealed Fate. And that was an interesting thing, giving you more kind of a background. But Kurtzman is on there, and he said something odd in the video, wanted to mention. And he says that, you know, showing this scene, it says, it frees them from canon completely, which is a big shekels off thing, but it also allows for an entirely new set of stories. How exactly? I don't really understand that, what he said at all. How does it free them from canon?
I don't know.
Because all they're doing is showing something that we know is supposed to happen. So how does it free them from canon? Now, what it does do is it adds the dimension of letting us know that Pike knows that this is going to happen and he freely submits to it. So, I mean, you could suddenly, you know, have certain stories there where you know that he's in danger and he knows that he's not going to die because that's not the moment that he witnessed. So it could be that. I don't know, but I thought that was an odd thing for him to say.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's it. I was hoping maybe we would get some new stories about the Picard show, but there still isn't much out there, and it's going to start shooting in the next like week and a half. So I would expect more casting news to come out, and there may be some that comes out between now and the time we release this, but if there is, we'll mention it next week.
Yep.
All right, Ruthie, why don't you tell people how to contact us?
All right. To submit your theories and feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You can submit text, audio, or use the SpeakPipe widget. Or you can call our voicemail at 304-837-2278. You can also email us at StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Or you can do what most people do and post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. You can also find us on Twitter at StarTrekGSM. And that's it.
A great way to support us is by subscribing to us in the podcast client of choice. If you're in Apple Podcasts, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple, and that will take you to all of the podcasts within the GSM network. While you're there, or if you're in another app that allows reviews or comments or what have you, leave us a rating or review or comment for that matter. And we don't have any new ratings or reviews this week, but thank you so much if you would like to help us out with a rating or review, hopefully a 5-star, that will help other people find us in the sea of Star Trek podcasts.
Yeah.
Share our posts and retweet us. You can do that. Like, we'll post on facebook.com/goldenspiralmedia when the episode comes out. You can share that. And the Facebook group, that's closed, so only members can experience those. But anyway, if you see us tweet, share, retweet us, that would all help. Other ways you can support the network can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And of course, I've been heard on The Walking Dead Talk Through. And as far as covering The Walking Dead for season 10, although I haven't made any official decision, the answer that I would probably say to this audience is probably not. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that I believe that season 10 will air concurrently with the Picard series, and I am not going to do this again to myself. I will only podcast on one show at a time, especially when it comes to a Star Trek show. And you better be damn straight to know that I'm going to be covering the Picard series over The Walking Dead at this point. Sorry, but that's the truth. And Ruthie will be there with me.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, not sorry.
I'm not either. But last week, a new trailer came out for Fear the Walking Dead. And I hate to say it, Ruthie, because I know you gave up on that show, but I think it's quite a bit better. That trailer made me cry because it was so good.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's...
I'm very happy for Fear the Walking Dead.
Anyway, well, some of those characters you didn't like on the show aren't there anymore. Spoiler.
Yeah.
Next episode is season 2, episode 13. And I did see somewhere what the title was, but I can't substantiate it. So I went back to try to confirm that it was that. But if I do know what the title is before I publish this, I'll stick it right here.
All right.
Editor's note. The next episode is titled Such Sweet Sorrow. We don't know who's written it exactly, but it had been reported that Michelle Paradise had written the 13th and 14th episodes. Whether or not that's solely or with a writing partner, I don't know. But supposedly Michelle Paradise, who's co-showrunner next season, is involved in the next two episodes. I don't know who's directed this one. It could be Olatunde Osunsanmi. And The reason why I say that is, if you recall, the 13th episode was supposed to be the last episode of the season, and then they extended it. So I'm wondering if this is going to be a part one, part two season finale. Mm. But I don't know that for sure. And I have a prediction based on things that I saw. We are going to see the Enterprise in this next episode, of course. But we are also going to see the Enterprise Bridge.
Hmm. What?
Wow.
And in fact, the reason why I can say that pretty convincingly, if you go to the end of the episode where they show the preview, and I know in Canada you don't see these, so Canadians, get a hold of it somewhere. I know it's on, I think it, you can see it on YouTube or somewhere, but get the trailer. You will see there is a shot there where it clearly shows they're on the Enterprise Bridge, and it is updated and it looks amazing. I loved it for that tenth of a second that I saw it. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.